Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 15, The Killing of Tenuka, the Ass Demon. Today's verse is text number 25. Vidyante bhukta purvani palani surabhinicha eshavai surabhir kanto Vishuchino Vagriyate. Translation. In the tall forest are sweet-smelling fruits no one has ever tasted. Indeed, even now we can smell the fragrance of the tall fruits spreading all about. Would you like to repeat? Yes. In the purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, Heisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada's servants ki jai, Gaur Premanande. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the sweet fragrance of the tall fruits was carried by an easterly wind, which is conducive to rain in Vrindavan area. This easterly wind generally blows in the month of Bhadra, and thus indicates the excellent ripeness of the fruits, while the fact that the boys could smell them indicates the nearness of the tall forest. Vidyante bhuktapurvani. In this rarefied atmosphere of Vrindavan, Krishna is constantly playing with his friends during the day, and we can see the nature of the relationship between Krishna and his friends from these verses and this pastime in which Krishna, the cowherd boys are requesting Krishna to go into the forest so that they and others can taste the fruits. Their real interest is so that Krishna can enjoy. That's always their real interest. And also, they want to see Krishna's pastime of killing this demon, because every day Krishna kills some demon, and it's a great sport to watch. I noticed people are interested in watching sports. They become really caught up in them. In America, we recently had a big sporting event that's hard not to notice because people make such a big deal of it, and they become emotionally wrapped up in it. And so that nature, that tendency to enjoy sports is there originally because everything is in this world is a reflection of what goes on in the spiritual world. As Krishna explains in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this material world is a reflected image of the spiritual world. And so the boys enjoy this sporting, and they're encouraging Krishna to go to the forest. And interesting also is that the smell of the fruits, the beautiful aroma, the sweet smell of the tall fruits is wafting from an easterly direction. And the acharyas are giving us guidance as we go through all these verses and hear about Krishna's pastimes. What are the subtle meanings behind these statements in the Srimad Bhagavatam? And of course, just from a calculative point of view, here we can understand that this is the easterly winds come during the month of Bhadra, which is sometime September, the new moon. The beginning of the new moon, sometime in August to September, is Bhadra. And also said here that there's an indication that from these winds that rain might be coming. And so all sensory perceptions are there in the spiritual world. Oftentimes, philosophers say that this material world is temporary, and sense interaction is part of this material world, and therefore when we become spiritual, we give up all sensory activities and become nothing. And Krishna says in the Gita, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, Manmana Mamupashrita, that one must give up the fear of personal existence. Sometimes there's a fear that I'm suffering in the material world because of my sensory interaction, and therefore I don't conceive of a way that in my real life, in my liberated life, I can actually have sensory activity. But the real sensory activity takes place on the spiritual platform. And the real emotion takes place on the spiritual platform in relationship to Krishna. We see the emotion here in this world that one living being develops for another in a temporary way during a sojourn in life, in a family situation, or in all the different kinds of relationships that one might have, but these become quickly diminished by the power of time. However, in the spiritual world, in relationship with Krishna, they're fully available and actually are the source of all the other kinds of relationships in this world. And these specific details of the spiritual world are capable of catching our mind and intelligence, just as a fish hook can catch a fish. So similarly, the spiritual aspirant must have some place to catch the mind. And if one meditates on nothing, that's not enough to catch the mind. Yogis are encouraged in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami says that the yogis must meditate on the personal form of the Lord, starting from the lotus feet of the Lord, working one's way up to the midsection and to the lotus feet of the Lord. And definitely the devotees who are associating with Krishna, they see all the different personal aspects of the Lord, and they become attached to him because of that, because of the specifics of the Lord's existence. Nama pankajanabhaya, nama pankajamaline, nama pankajanitraya, namaste pankajangriye. Queen Kunti's offering her prayers to Krishna and noticing his lotus-like navel. Because she's his aunt, she doesn't want to embarrass him by starting with his feet, because that would, socially, she's in a superior position. Therefore, she starts mentioning his lotus navel. Nama pankaja netraya, nama pankaja, nama pankaja nabaya, nama pankaja netraya, namas. So she's noticing all the different aspects of Krishna's specific features. And this is what catches the mind, the specifics of Krishna's features. In Vrindavan, the devotees notice the footprints of the Lord because they have very specific markings. And those footprints actually stay on the dust of Vrindavan, even though there's trillions and trillions of cows walking around. When Krishna leaves the house in the morning, when he goes with his boyfriends, as he is here, going into the forest, his boyfriends have tens of thousands of cows each. And Krishna has how many calves? A one followed by 17 zeros. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in the pastime of Agasura, he mentions that even with all these, how many calves is that anyway? Mathematicians, it's more than trillions, but I don't have a name for it. The footprints of Krishna don't become diminished because the calves and the cows and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, when they're walking, they're very careful not to step on Krishna's footprints, so they avoid them to preserve them on the dust. And in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned that a meditating yogi, when he meditates on the lotus feet of the Lord, if he thinks of the thunderbolt that's there on the lotus feet of the Lord, that marking, it can smash mountains of sin that have been accumulated in the heart of the yogi just by meditating on the footprint of the Lord. But to speak of all the other personal aspects of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord altogether. And this is the approach of those who are in the direct process of worshiping the Lord called bhakti, where one hears about the personal pastimes of the Lord in the spiritual world. And by that process, becomes purified of sins, and all the tendencies to enjoy in the material world become diminished. And then one becomes positively attached to the personality of Godhead. Shrinvatam swa kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantaksto hibhadrani vidhunoti suhritsatam. Just by hearing, Lord Sri Krishna is the Paramatma, the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. The sound vibration of Krishna's pastimes enters the ears and then into the heart. And vidunoti means that it shakes off all the previous impressions of the material world, sensory perceptions, which begin with a kind of curiosity. Dhyato vishayan pumsam sangas teshu pajayate. Through curiosity, the tatasta, the living entity who can look at anything he wants. Tatasta means you can go wherever you want. You can look at whatever you feel like. But if you look at the inferior material nature and become curious about it, and then you become tempted by it, and you contemplate it and think that there's something in this for me, there's some kind of enjoyment in it for me, then you become captured by it. Jayato vishayan pumsam sangas teshu pajayate. By attachment, you become attached to it. And that's how all living entities are in a kind of a trance, attached to the material world. We actually have nothing to do with the material energy. Actually, it's hard to deal with the material energy, isn't it? Or is it just me? I get constantly frustrated by it. All kinds of technology, nothing ever seems to work well. Even Apple products don't have difficulties in, no matter what it is. It's frustrating, but the spiritual energy is not frustrating. It's easy to understand because it's eternal, and so are we, so am I. And it just makes sense. It just works well. Material energy doesn't work well. It's always fraught with all kinds of anomalies and difficulties and things you weren't expecting in a bad way. So hearing about Krishna's pastimes and the details of Krishna's pastimes is particularly important because that means the pastimes of Krishna, are divyam, they're transcendental, and they're full of spiritual punya and the power to purify the heart. Krishna helps from within the heart of those who listen to his messages. And so it shakes off all these previous impressions, just like when you'd shake out a rug, vidhunoti, it shakes it off. And one becomes positively convinced about the pastimes of the Lord and his abode and his personal associates by hearing. And then one can actually cut off one's attachment to the material world, which is important because asango kyayam purushaha. I actually have nothing to do with the material world. It's only my attachment to it that is causing my difficulty in my stay here. But we really have nothing to do with the material world other than our attachment. So to realign our attachment to Krishna by hearing about him, vidyate hridaya grantish chidyante sarvasamshaya shyante chasya karmani drishtayivatmanishvare, that it cuts the knot in the heart. That knot is the false ego, the connection to this material world. And so something very special about these pastimes in the 10th canto, everything in the first nine cantos leading up to these pastimes of Krishna and his playful pastimes with his associates in the spiritual world. Vikriditam vrajavadur viraham cha Vishnu shradhanvito nashinu yad anuvarna yad ya. There's a way in which Shukadeva Goswami says that if you hear with faith these pastimes, ridrogam ashvapahinot apacharena tira, the dread disease of the heart will become conquered and you'll attain the topmost kind of devotion to Krishna. So the topic of Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world, well, Shukadeva Goswami spoke this to Parikshit Maharaj, and just after Parikshit Maharaj heard it, there was some time before the snake bird would bite him, and his mother Uttara asked about what is the essence? Give me the essence of the essence of what you heard. Srimad Bhagavatam is already the essence, isn't it? Nigama kalpatora galitam balam shuka mukaram rita drava samyutam. It's like Shukadeva Goswami has taken the essence of all the Vedic literature and it's become, he made it into a smoothie. Like it's blended. It's, you can just drink it. It's like nectar that you can drink. You don't have to sort through all the other aspects of the Vedas. He's given the very essence of it. And not only that, it's pre-blended. So you can just drink it. And then Uttara wants to know what Parikshit Maharaj heard, because she didn't hear the entire dialogue. She didn't have a proximity to be able to hear the whole thing. So she asks about the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, very intelligently, she asked about, she could understand that there is a very special kind of devotion, and a very specific, exclusive kind of devotion, like we're hearing about here, that devotees have very intimate association with Krishna. Therefore, there must be a special place where these devotees associate with Krishna in this way. Where is that place, she wants to know. And so Parikshit Maharaj describes to her what he heard and speaks the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And I was just thinking of that because within the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, then there's a discussion within a discussion. There's a brahmana who becomes awakened to his spiritual life after he receives a mantra from Kamakya Devi, who is an expansion of Durga, who is the family deity of this brahmin. He lives in somewhere near Assam. And in a dream, he gets the mantra and he begins to chant the mantra, even though he's unacquainted with what the power of the mantra is. But it's a Gopal mantra, Krishna mantra. And just, you know, summarizing, of course, he comes to Vrindavan and he meets his guru, Gopakumar. And Gopakumar then tells his own story about how he went back to Godhead. And he also received a mantra from a guru. And, of course, he took the mantra from a guru, and his guru fainted after he gave it to him out of ecstasy and wasn't able to give him any instruction about the mantra. In any case, Gopakumar tells this Brahmin from Mathura, who's originally from Mathura, he says that by hearing another's story, one can quickly learn about spiritual life. So he tells his own story. He says, normally one doesn't talk about oneself, but I'll tell my story of how I went back home, back to Godhead. So in the course of that story, he reveals how he received his mantra, and it took him through all parts of the universe, and finally he was able to go back home, back to Godhead by the power of the mantra and the mercy of his guru. And then, after he went back to Godhead, Srimati Radharani told him to come back to Vrindavan to meet this Mathura Brahmin and bring him back to Godhead also. So out of duty and wanting to please Srimati Radharani, he went there And he met this Brahmin in Vrindavan who began to instruct him. And at the time, after he gives him his entire, he tells his story about going back to Godhead and gives him spiritual instruction. At that time, they meaning Gopakumar and the Brahmin, hear Krishna and his friends coming. And this Mathura Brahmin then meets Krishna. Krishna actually comes and embraces both Gopakumar and the Mathura Brahmin. By that time, the Gopakumar's name is Sarup. It's actually his name in the spiritual world. And when Krishna sees the Mathura Brahmin, he calls him Janasharma, which is the first time he hears his spiritual name from Krishna himself. And Krishna is so grateful and so loving toward these two. And when he sees Janasharma, who's now taken shelter of Gopakumar or Sarup, he wants to do something for him out of a feeling of great gratitude. And he wants to give him something very special. And he thinks that there's nothing more special than myself. And so therefore, for the first time ever, he takes off all his ornaments that he's wearing and he decorates Janasharma with his own personal ornaments. And so he looks like a resident of Goloka at that time. And then he tells him, you take shelter of Sarup. And later, of course, Janasharma is able to go back home, back to Godhead. I bring that up because this is all the topic of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is the essence of the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it giving very specific knowledge about Krishna in the spiritual world, as we're hearing in these pastimes. And by hearing them submissively in the association of faithful devotees, then we develop an attachment for them. And we develop an attachment for Krishna. Tannama rupa charitari sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasanam manasiniyo jatishtan vraje tananuragi jananugami kalam nayada kilamityupadesha saram. Rupa Goswami says the essence of all advice is that one should organize one's life so that he or she can constantly hear, chant, and remember the Lord's pastimes, names, qualities, and so forth. And in that way, step by step, manasa kramena means step by step, one will come to become, to live in Vrindavan, tishtan vraje tan anuragi, and one will become an anuragi, which means will become specifically attracted to following a particular resident of Vrindavan, in the mood of a particular resident of Vrindavan who's in a relationship with Krishna. And then we'll come to live in Vrindavan. So this is the direct process of devotional service. Anyway, these are a few random comments on a verse I was trying to get my mind around. But now I'll just take some reflections and questions if you have any. Yes.
Thank you for giving this association.
Thank you for yours.
Heard how for last so many decades you've been doing book distribution day in, day out, consistently. So I wanted to know that it requires a lot of mode of goodness, lot of consistency to be able to do the same service. So I wanted to know if you could share your realizations on how for last so many years you've been doing, so that, you know, we can also do our services and sadhana focused day in, day out. So if you can please share some of your thoughts on this.
Share my thoughts on how to maintain service?
For decades, I mean, you've been...
Consistently for decades. Well, my friend Suradas once told me, your seva will save you. And Seva is not ordinary. If we get any kind of seva, it's coming from Krishna. And we should hold on to it like a rope, because that rope will pull us back to Godhead. And no matter what else happens in your life, whatever kind of phases you go through in your life, if you hold on to your seva, then you'll be saved. Krishna will pull you back to Godhead by that rope. And the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a manifestation of his internal potency. And it is by that particular potency that one comes to see the Lord face to face. That's a verbatim statement from Srila Prabhupada's purport in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Should I say it again? The direct order of the Lord is a manifestation of his internal potency, and it is by that particular potency that one comes to see the Lord face to face. So when we get a direct order from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the order comes through the representative of the Lord, and we take that, we have the rope that will pull us back to Godhead so we can see the Lord face to face. By serving the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with great vigor and using all our senses, especially there can be trouble in youthful, of course there can be trouble anytime in the material world, but during youthful years, the senses are very strong. And there's a way in which they can override the intelligence and convince one that, I really will live forever. I am invincible and so on. I was thinking actually just recently of how the activity, my service of book distribution was so engaging that it has all kinds of, there's all kinds of excitement because you go out and face all kinds of circumstances and all kinds of people that have the oddest kinds of excuses and interesting stories and so forth. And it's always a challenge. And then, of course, there's, the feeling of accomplishment and competition and so forth. It's a real activity. And so are all the other services we do in devotional service. And engaging in those, all the senses, they give us a way to move through the different phases of our life with some real engagement. You have to have some real engagement. It can't just be theoretical, because ultimately we have to have engagement for the senses. So with service also, you can always become more expert. Can anyone say they've perfected their service and you can't do any more? That's the point at which you'd probably quit and go do something else if you think like that. Akinchana Krishna Prabhu, who I have been learning Madanga from, told me that his Madanga teacher told him that once you think you're done, you're done. With Madanga or with anything else, you have to always remain hungry and humble and think, how can I make it better? How can I increase it? And so I guess what I'm saying is it's important to have engagement for the senses, and service gives the senses something to do that is transcendental and which gives taste also. Shushru sho shadadhanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahat sevya vipra punya tirta nishayavanat. When you work hard to serve the mahatmas, then they give you some mercy and they give you a little ruchi to hear and chant. And then the two things complement each other. Work hard in your service and then take advantage of whatever taste you have to hear and chant as much as possible. Those two things go well together. If I think of more, I'll say more. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I had some questions about Prabhupada books actually, and like Prabhupada wrote these books saying that these books will be for next thousands of years, and these purports are, he has taken from all the acharyas and really made them very simple to understand the people of Kali Yuga and things like that. But like I have this question because the language keep changing, like every 30, 40, 50, 100 years, one part of the language. Second is like contemporary things and relevant things. And sometime like somebody may feel some part of the Prabhupada purports are a little heavy for him or her, or depend on the culture and different part of the world. So I just want to know, because you have read also them thoroughly, distributed them to a various kind of people, like what is your experience of this? Like, I mean to say, did Prabhupada mention anywhere, like we need some more kind of things will be needed, which can, like it's not replace them, please don't, but at least to begin with, to give somebody, because like say this book called Life Come From Life.
So just make a question.
Yeah.
Make one question.
So I'm just asking, what do you think like about this,
about
giving
what?
These books to any new person? Will everybody will be appreciate, or should we bring something other, like something called?
No,
like
not everyone will appreciate. Definitely not everyone appreciates. It takes there has to be some kind of sukriti in the heart to appreciate Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. So, sometimes we show a book to someone and they already have that kind of inclination. And so they'll immediately say, oh yes, I've been looking for this or so. And other people, they have no idea what you're talking about. And so they can't appreciate it right away. But Sankirtan, the Samyak Kirtan, we're not trying, you know, for each person, we're not expecting each person to be on the same level. But we have to become expert at finding out the ways and means to engage everyone as fully and appropriately as possible. Appropriately and as fully as possible. And Ishvare tara dineshu balisheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakroti samadhyamaha. The preacher has to categorize people and see some people are innocent. And for the innocent, he gives as much mercy as possible. For the devotees, he makes appropriate kinds of friendships, gives his love to the Supreme Lord. And for those who are envious, he neglects them for their own good. Because if he tries to engage them more vehemently, they simply resist and may become even more offensive and so forth. And it's regarding the idea about Prabhupada's books and the specific language and how they appeal to various kinds of people in different cultures. My experience is that it's not just an isolated incident that somebody gets a book somewhere. Of course, it can be. Someone might get a book somewhere and begin reading it, but get inspired by it, or not, as the case may be. But the point is that then they seek sadhu sangha, and the sadhu sangha has to be there also, so people can come and get a complete experience of what people are like who are reading and practicing what's in the book. I mean, that's the process described by the acharyas, adau shraddha tata sadhu sangha. In the beginning, there's faith, and if a person doesn't have any faith, it's because they don't have any sukriti, bhakti mukhi sukriti. They haven't come in contact with anybody yet. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami that the living entities are like logs floating down an endless river, and they never stop until somehow or other they get good fortune. And one of those logs then comes up on the dry land. And so similarly, when we're preaching, we're looking to engage everyone in the proper way. And if somebody doesn't yet have sukriti, the devotee's looking for a way to give them an opportunity to start their devotional service. Prabhupada tells a story of the brahmacharis, or a brahmachari going door to door, begging alms for the temple. And at one house, there's the couple is having an argument, and they're in an agitated mood. So when the brahmachari comes to the door and asks for alms, have you ever had this experience? You knock on the door, and they're having a fight inside. And they're just agitated when they open the door. Funniest thing, some of the Indian devotees in our community went door to door during the Super Bowl. I don't know, it's a big sporting event, probably on par to the, what do you have in this country? The World, the soccer match that everyone watches? IPR? IPR, yeah, but what's the biggest match of the year? Huh? IPR, okay. Santosh Trophy. All right, so anyway, they didn't ask me about it, but they went door to door during this big sporting event when people were glued to the television. It was like life and death. And then they came back and said, people weren't very receptive. Anyway, it was pretty funny. But then, so, now I forgot my point. I got distracted. I distracted myself. Oh, so the brahmachari was going door to door, and the couple was having an argument, so they came to the door, and the woman of the house said, give him some ashes, tell him to go away. So the man took some ashes from the stove, threw it in the begging bowl, and said, now get out of here, there's your donation. So the brahmachari went back to the ashram, and went to the pujari and said, take these ashes very carefully and use them to polish the deity's paraphernalia. And so the pujari carefully every day took out some of the ashes and polished the paraphernalia. And then later the brahmachari was wandering around doing bhikshu, and then he came to the door again. He forgot which neighborhood he was in. But then the same couple opened the door and they saw him and they fell at his feet. And they said, please forgive us. Now, we beg for your mercy. We'd like to take to this path of devotional service and so on. And Prabhupada says, from one pinch of ashes, back home, back to Godhead. So there's a way that devotees always thinking like that. I call this the penny principle. I'm writing a book about Sankirtan, and in it there's basic principles I was writing. One of them is called the penny principle. There was a couple of years ago during our Christmas marathon, there was a devotee named Bhakta Kumar, and he was going door to door. So he went to one door, and he was showing the Bhagavad Gita, and I told everyone, all the Gitas must go. Don't hold back. Just, get them out there as quickly as possible to as many people as possible. Don't worry about how much you get. Just make sure they get the book. And so, Bhakta Kumar's, and also we have the principle, if they give something in return, of course, it qualifies them to be able to read the book. And incidentally, and don't let me forget where I'm at in the story, you'll remember, that Krishna in the Gita says, don't preach to people who are not devoted or austere. He says that, right? So we're going out meeting all kinds of people who aren't devoted or austere. That's why we ask for a donation. When you give a donation, it's an austerity. We know this because when we ask for the donation and we watch their face and how they try to get out of it, we know it's an austerity. And it shows some kind of donation, a devotion. So Bhakta Kumar approached the door. A man came to the door, was not interested in the Bhagavad Gita, but Bhakta Kumar insisted. He said, no, take it, just, but give something. And the man said, how much should I give? I don't want to give. And he said, well, just give a penny. So the man said, all right, I'll give a penny. So he goes to his room in the apartment, and he's looking through the drawer to find one penny. So his wife comes in and he says, what are you looking for? He says, a penny. He said, what do you want a penny for? He said, there's this guy at the door and he gave me this book and he said that, give a donation. And he said, you can give a penny and I'm going to give him a penny. And she said, let me see that book. She starts looking through. She said, this is worth a lot more than a penny. She says, you're not giving him a penny. And she made him go out there and give $50. So Bhakta Kumar came running down the hallway and say, guess what happened? I asked for a penny, I got $50. So we call this the penny principle because it works in spiritual life. Krishna says, swalpam apyasya dharmasya, that even if it starts with a little su'alpam, little tiny bit, it always grows into something more. If it starts, then it grows. And that's the principle we're looking for when we go out to preach. Let's just get people started somewhere or another. I tell the devotees, our goal isn't to sell the book. It's just to engage everyone as completely and as appropriately as possible, and to engage ourselves also. And Krishna helps. He helps the whole process. So we do the best we can with what we have, and the best thing we have are these books that Prabhupada gave us. We notice that they miss the mark with some people because they're not ready to hear it yet. But then there's a way in which, over and over again, we hear how they get it. It sits for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and all of a sudden they go, oh no, what? I missed 20 years. And now I just started reading it and so forth. And, we have to also give people as much support as possible. So when somebody gets a book and they have that faith starts to sprout in their heart, we have to have complete ways to fan the spark and also nourish their bhakti. And that's most people's experience of what's in Prabhupada's books, and their faith in it comes from that association with devotees. In other words, you ask for, about certain parts of Prabhupada's books that might offend certain people in certain cultures. So my experience has been that if they know the devotee who's connected to the book, if they read that part of the book, they relate it to the devotee, and they'll come to the devotee and say, what about this? And then you say, well, this, and they'll say, all right, I trust you, so I can digest it. I can digest it because I trust you. I see that you're actually a product of the book. They see that. So those things, it's a complete program. All those things have to be in place. To raise a child, you need all kinds of support from all different angles. And a whole village raises a child. Hillary Clinton wrote a book called It Takes a Village. It means that to raise one child, it takes all kinds of support from all different all the relatives. So similarly, for one soul to come out of darkness requires everyone working together to help him. A lot to say on that, but anyway. So, yeah.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, recently in a class, Radhanand Maharaj was mentioning about your going with him to Redwood Forest and a lot of experiences he was sharing. So we wanted to hear from you some of them.
Well, I was saved from the material world by Srila Prabhupada, and I'm sustained in my devotional practice by my god brothers and god sisters. I get so much inspiration, and actually my favorite activity is spending time with my god brothers and god sisters. It gives me solace. And sometimes I think about my god brothers, and it's important to have close friends in Krishna consciousness. Very important. Didati pratigrinati, kuyama kyati prichati, bhunti bojete chaiva, shadvadinam pratilakshanam. We have to have loving exchanges with devotees. I had an experience once when I was in Vrindavan. I was sitting next to one of my god brothers who's very dear to me, and we were chanting japa in Prabhupada's samadhi. And as we were chanting, and I was experiencing some ecstasy from sitting next to this devotee, I was thinking that I don't know if I could live without him. I don't think I could live without him. And then I started feeling separation from that devotee. Just even as I was sitting next to him, it was a profound experience. I was feeling actual separation from him, even though he was sitting 2 inches from me. And so one of the things you asked about, you know, a lifetime of devotional service, one of the things that has sustained me throughout the years has been loving exchanges with God brothers, whom I can reveal my mind to and listen to them reveal their mind and so on. And there are all kinds of situations that come up in life, I think. Or is it just me? And to be able to process them, process those different situations by talking to beloved God brothers who you can reveal your mind to is the most vital aspect of devotional service. It's not just philosophy. And somehow by Krishna's arrangement, I have a relationship like that with His Holiness Radhanath Swami, and somehow it developed from our going up to the Mir woods together to walk and talk. And in the process of doing that, we've had some interesting experiences. One of them was that we almost got arrested because we stayed in the park so long. Muir Woods is a place Prabhupada walked. So we go there because Maharaj likes it so much because Prabhupada's a holy place. And it's very soothing. It's like going through a car wash for your subtle body and soul. That beautiful trees and brooks and things like that. So anyway, we went one time into the forest, and it was very crowded. It's a popular tourist place. The parking lot was full of cars, hundreds of cars. And then we stayed so long, we're talking for so long, sitting by a bridge, just talking and talking. Then we got lost, and as far as the time goes, we forgot what time it was and realized it was getting dark, so we walked out of the park and noticed that they were closing everything, and there were no more cars in the parking lot, except for ours and one other car. And just as we were about to step in the car, a ranger pulled up in his car behind us, but really fast. And he jumped out and he said, "Hold it right there." And I said, "You're kidding, right?" And he said, "No, I'm not kidding. Hold it right there and keep your hands visible." And Maharaj had already gotten in the car on the other side, and the ranger said, "And tell him to get out and come." So they came out, and then two other cars pulled in. There were some state troopers, different law enforcement officers, and they pulled up as if it was a big sting operation. It was very confusing, actually. I mean, what it could have been. And they didn't tell us for about 10 minutes, and they were questioning us. And we had a picnic. We sat in a grassy place and we had a picnic, and there was some pasta. So pasta sauce, there was one little spot on Maharaj's dhoti. And in the interrogation, first 10 minutes, and when they were interrogating us, the guy, he said, "What is that? Is that blood?" And so then they finally told us that somewhere in this park, then a man had been assaulted and beat up by somebody wearing monk's clothes. And what are the chances of somebody wearing monk's clothes walking through the forest? And so we were the only ones there wearing monk's clothes. So they held us for an hour. After about 10 minutes, they started to realize that we were not the violent types and they could see. But they still had to hold us because they had to bring the man down from the mountain, bring him by in the police car, and he looked out the window and said, "That's not them," and then they let us go. But afterwards, we were thinking about how anything can happen in this material world. Prabhupada said, coming across the ocean, at one time it's smooth and glassy, and then 2 minutes later, a big storm comes and knocks over your boat. And so we shouldn't think summer all summer. We should think winter's coming. And we should realize that anything can happen in the material world. We don't know what we've done in the past. We don't know what kind of situations are coming. So we should be prepared by always remembering Krishna and taking shelter as much as possible. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here. I don't know what took me so long to come back, but I'm very happy to be here in this famous holy place. And all of you have developed a world reputation for your enthusiasm for spreading Krishna consciousness and for your dedication to Sri Guru and Gauranga. And I thank you very much for your association. Vancha kalpatrubhascha kripatsnabevacha patitanam bhavani vaishnabhyebhyo namo namaha. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go pray manande aribo.